Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third straight year.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Steve DiBianco is here, too, because he's one of the smartest guys I know. Outstanding member of our Brain Trust, longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's vice president with the Association of Competitive Technologies, and the leader and the founder of that organization, Jonathan Zook, who's been on the show many times. Well, this is the same organization as you. Those of you who listen to the show regularly are saying, yeah, we know who Steve DiBianco is. He's that guy who helps us understand where the world is going with from a technology standpoint, not only from the standpoint of the stuff that we use, but the public policy issues around those things that affect us. And hopefully, ladies and gentlemen, if you've heard Steve talk about these issues over the last many years, you understand that a computer and all the technology that you use is not as simple as the box in front of you. There are forces out there that are trying to cause you to not be able to use those things as well, or to not be able to own the things as successfully that you create on that technology. And so the world is a better place because we have folks like Steve DiBianco who not only are covering those issues and are trying to make sure that those things are headed in our favor, small businesses' favor, but also who's willing to report back to us how things are going. He's going to do that right now. Steve DiBianco, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim. Thanks. I hope your holidays are going well.
They're going well, and I hope you had a good 2005, and I hope you have a great next year.
And that's a good segue to this segment. I listened to Suzanne on your previous guest. She talked about the guts on the inside that it takes to start a small business.
Yep.
And once you got the inside mastered, it also helps to think about what the outside world is going to do to you and your small business. And we like to call that the tech environment. And in fact,
that's a concept that most small business owners just don't have. It's not on their radar screen, is it?
No, and maybe it's because they think, well, I'm not in the tech industry, so I don't need to worry about the environment for technology-based businesses. But I don't know too many businesses anymore that aren't technology-based.
That's right.
In some way, since we rely so heavily on technology for communication and productivity. And even if your business is dry cleaning, I know they're going to be using a lot of technology, both to get the processes done and to measure the accounting, forecasting, cash flow management, employee and payroll. So technology matters to everybody. So the tech environment becomes relevant, I think, to all small businesses.
No question about it. And you've done a great job over the years. You and the other members of your organization have done a great job over the years waking us up, getting our eyes open to the fact that we are, even if we don't create technology products, that we act because we're technology consumers, that we actually have a stake in the fight that's out there, this public policy debate and the public policy struggle that's out there, because there are forces, Steve, as you've helped us understand, there are forces out there who actually could do us harm.
Right, and sometimes the forces are just as benign as inertia, in that it's very difficult to get government moving.
Right.
But other times they're actually a little more sinister than that. There are entrenched interests who want to protect a particular market that they've carved out for themselves. There might be interests who want to take over the governance of certain aspects of what we do in our lives.
Can we stop there for a second and get a quick report on something you and I reported on back in the fall, and that is the issue of the ICANN issue, the governance of the internet, and that the some forces of the UN and especially the EU were trying to wrest that from the international or maybe take the headquarters from the United States to somewhere else. And we reported on that, and I want you to tell the audience what happened.
Jim, great memory that you pulled that one out. To me, that was such
a big
problem. Exactly. Pay attention. Even knew what I can.
I pay attention.
I can't the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. This is actually a nonprofit organization that the U.S. government set up in the 1990s to just sort of manage the assignment of names and numbers, names like domain names, numbers like IP addresses on the Internet.
Like actonline.org and smallbusinessadvocate.com.
Exactly, and those things map to certain IP addresses or numbers, and this corporation is just supposed to make the rules for assigning those names and numbers. It would seem to be a basic plumbing, electricity-type utility function, but yet the United Nations set its sight on that governance aspect and said, look, the United States should not have an influence over the setup of those names and numbers. It ought to be something the UN controls.
Even though the chairman of that body is an Australian.
It is, and you're right, and the body itself is a multinational body.
Well, when we come back, Steve's going to tell us what happened. If you're paying attention, you'll remember that I told you what happened, but I want Steve to give us a report on that, because his organization, actonline.org, had influence on what happened, and he'll tell us about that right after these messages. 20 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us. We're back. 1712. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Steve Del Bianco is our guest. He's Vice President with the Association for Competitive Technologies. And Steve, before we do anything else, we've got to finish up that report of the meeting that was actually held in November.
That's right.
Around the 17th, if I'm not mistaken.
Very good.
And that was the final meeting where they were going to, who sanctioned this meeting? Who actually hosted this meeting?
The United Nations has a group called the World Society, the World Summit on Information Society.
Yeah.
And they host meetings all over the world. It's like travel agent's dream come true when you've got a client who has to travel to all the UN meetings. It's incredible. The next two meetings of the ZICAN group, for instance, are in Morocco and New Zealand. And
Would you get me on that committee? I'd like to be join that committee.
Jim, you might want to make the trip, but I'm pretty sure you wouldn't want to endure those meetings. It's like being in a root canal while your nerves are being pulled out.
I think you're right. It'd be like worse than waterboarding, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah. And the meeting in Tunisia was held in November. And just before that meeting, there was tremendous momentum on the part of nations like Iran and China, who were pushing hard for the UN to take over the governance of the Internet, so that the rules that they would want to prescribe for things like censoring content on the Internet
right. Could
be imposed at the structural level of assigning names and numbers.
And folks, if you like the oil for food scandal, you'd love the UN being in charge of ICANN.
It's true enough. But fortunately, just before that meeting, the U.S. Congress came together, which is an extremely unusual circumstance these days. Both the House and Senate, all Republicans and all Democrats, voted together on some resolutions to tell the U.S. government to stiffen the backbone and insist on retaining this sort of backstop-type control over the plumbing of the Internet. I mean, United States got the Internet started. Mainly U.S. companies invested $1 trillion to build the Internet out and bring mm-hmm. Internet presence to over a billion people around the planet. And what ain't broke ought not be fixed. So we insisted that the U.S. maintain that sort of backstop control. Sent a very strong letter over to the United Kingdom and European Union officials, and I think they saw the light, and at the very last minute said, no, we ought not try to take over the running of ICANN, but instead set up some separate talking forums to discuss all these Internet governance issues that the rest of the world is concerned about. And that's great. I think they
so we can all breathe a little easier because of that.
That's
so
right.
I thank you for that report, because I have told the audience that nothing came, that we were successful, when I say we, through extension of your organization and some other hard workers. I had told them that you know, they could breathe easier about ICANN, but we had not given them the report like you just did. Let's move on and talk about what other issues happened in 2005 and that we need to report on, and where are we headed for 2006?
Thanks, Jim. The Internet governance issue sort of seems thousands of miles away. So now let's turn to something a lot closer to home, like right in your own backyard, where states all around this nation have commissions and governance boards that control things like auctioneers, pawn brokers, and even real estate sales.
Yeah.
these are licensing and regulatory bodies that are usually controlled by people that come from the industry, and they're given the force of state law, because most people who want to, say, sell real estate in Alabama have to get a real estate license from the state, and so things that the rules on what it takes to sell real estate in your state are going to be controlled.
It's basically a legal monopoly, isn't it? How many states, for example, realtors, how many states have locked out the ability to charge whatever they want to charge, what a company would want to charge for commissions on real estate?
Yeah, it's interesting, Jim. None of them are allowed because of antitrust rules.
But they do it.
Some very clever ways to do it. One of the clever ways they do it, they say that if you're a realtor who wants to sort of offer very limited services, like put up a sign and put the home in the multiple listing service, you might be thinking you want to do that for a 3.5% or 4% commission instead of charging the seller 6%. And those business models are all over the country. And yet we have many as half a dozen states right now that have rules that say that, wait a minute, to be a realtor, there are minimum service requirements.
Yeah.
At the very least, you've got to show up and give an entire array of forms. You have to provide a minimum level of service to a home seller, or you have to present them with a whole host of forms that show all the services you're not going to provide. And these are really attempts to limit the number
right.
of brokers who can compete by offering discounts.
There was a great article, and I'm trying to think. I think it was Alan Murray who wrote this article. I'm not sure, for the Wall Street Journal.
That's right.
And he was pointing out that travel agents and stockbrokers have not been able to maintain a sort of an imputed commission because the efficiencies of the internet and other organizations who become more efficient were able to charge a rate that was much more appropriate for what people were getting, for the service they were getting. And so basically it did undercut the previous commissions on different things like travel agents and stockbrokers. And those two industries have had to make some changes for the benefit of the consumer. But what his point was that the real estate industry, the realtor industry, has not done that. They've been able to maintain these levels, and he felt artificially, and I agree with him.
It's true. And there are some rules within the real estate industry that make it much tougher for a small upstart internet-based realty to try to use the internet to attract customers and to show listings of other brokers too. So I think that a lot's going to change on that in 2006, Jim. You know, the U.S.
I hope so because
the Department has filed an antitrust suit against the realtors.
Yeah.
National Association of Realtors. And that case is going to just be getting into discovery pretty soon. I'm actually a witness in the case
because
of all the work I've done in the area.
I hope that's the case. If you create a website that allows people to see a house without ever leaving their home, without your involvement other than the technology, and then you take them to see one or two homes that suits them, then they ought to be saving some money there. And I think that's, and I know that makes a lot of realtors mad, but I can't help it. Technology is good for consumers, and they need to be passing on those savings to the consumer. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Steve DelBianco is our guest. Steve, tell us about the Association for Competitive Technologies.
Jim, our website is www.actonline.org. And we've got a couple of thousand small tech companies and a half a dozen big tech companies as our members. And we make it our mission to try to improve the technology environment for technology-based businesses and businesses that use technology to improve their productivity. We work in federal and state government level. We're always anxious for new members. Members can actually go to the website. Small members can actually join for free. And there's a due structure on there as well.
Thank you for that. And, folks, I encourage you to not only join the organization, but to support them. Once you learn more about what the Association for Competitive Technologies does, you'll want to support them with a little bit, I think, of financial assistance. If you can, I'd encourage you to do that. Okay, Steve, what's coming up?
I would also say that in 2006, let's keep a real close eye on another burden, another barrier that will get in the way of e-commerce, and that is the burdens of having to collect, file, and remit sales taxes for states where you don't have any presence. Late this month in the Senate, we had a federal bill that would mandate that all sellers, collect sales tax on states where they don't have a physical presence.
Currently, if they don't have what they call a nexus, where an operation, an installation of a division or a branch or whatever in a state, and they sell online,
well, it has nothing to do with selling online.
Right, right, you're right. I was just thinking because the catalogs do the same thing.
That's right.
Yeah. But if they don't have the nexus, they don't have to collect sales tax for in a transaction like that.
Now, the sales taxes still do. It's the buyer who has to pay their use tax.
And but the seller doesn't have to collect it.
That's right. But businesses that do buy online at something like 90 to 95% do pay their use tax on stuff that they buy,
right,
whether from catalog, from online, or elsewhere. And keep in mind that any catalog in any website that sells in states where it has a physical presence already has to collect and remit sales tax in,
right,
those states where they have presence.
And they do.
So people have this mistaken notion that somehow online sales or the Internet is tax-free, and nothing could be further from the truth. It's
mm-hmm.
fully taxed today. And the only question is whether the burdens of having to collect and remit and file for 7,600 different taxing jurisdictions with their own rules and regulations is a burden that's reasonable to stick on small businesses using the Internet or catalog to reach new customers.
Every state has dozens and dozens of different methodologies for collecting sales tax, don't they?
They do, in different rates. And the states are making a good faith effort to try to simplify and streamline that.
And
we have to raise the bar. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to do in Washington, is to raise the bar to make sure that it's truly simplified and that they compensate sellers for those burdens,
right,
that they protect small businesses from the burdens that they could never reasonably carry.
So the small businesses out there, Steve, who are taking my advice and not just doing business locally, they're doing business online, through catalogs, whatever method they use, in other parts of the country, of the United States, not just in their own backyard. If they have their way, that will put an extra burden on those small businesses, and I think that's wrong.
True enough, and that's one of the reasons we're lobbying so hard for a small business exception in whatever comes out of the Congress.
Right.
It's currently in one of the drafts has a small business exception. The other has a process for determining one used through the Small Business Administration. We're lobbying very hard to make sure that it's a robust small business exception.
Right.
And that when a small business gets big enough to lose the exception, we want to make sure that there's compensation and computer systems available from the states so that burden doesn't cripple you.
Of all the issues you work on, Steve, this has got to be the one issue that wakes you up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
It sure does, Jim. It sure does.
Yeah, and I mean, there are a lot of things you work on, but this one is the most important, really, isn't it?
And I think the 2006 and 7 and 8 will be the years that we'll see the remote sales tax move through.
Yeah.
And it'll probably be mixed up with a couple of other remote sales tax and Internet access tax issues that are coming up for renewal in the Congress.
Don't we need to, what language, I've got 30 seconds, Steve, what language should we use when we talk to our delegation, our congressional delegation, about our attitude about this?
It's got to be this, that you've got to make sure that the states truly simplify and streamline their tax systems and that they compensate sellers who have to collect,
right,
and that they protect small businesses.
So, for example, instead of 7,600 different methodologies for collecting tax, there would be basically one.
Unfortunately, they're not going to go there. The states want to preserve the ability to let every county, town, and locality have its own rates, but they want to put a database together and make that database available to you so that you can look it up, calculate, and that you can file in one state.
So that's where it's going. Well, I hadn't heard that. Yeah, Steve, there's so much more to talk about. Will you come back again in January and give us another update?
I can't wait, Jim.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Happy New Year, sir.
New Year to you.
Steve Del Bianco, ladies and gentlemen, you know who he is. He's the best. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, and I'll be back on the other side of the news.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.